Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb. And this is the Leading Learning Podcast. Hey there, we are back in action with a second episode of our After Action Review for the Leading Learning Symposium. And this is continuing our last episode where we just took a look at what happened at the recent Leading Learning Symposium in Baltimore with the aim of reflecting and trying to plan for improvements for the next time around. If you did not listen to that last episode, you can get that by going to leadinglearning.com/episode13. And it's certainly not required to listen to the first episode first, but if you want to do things in order, you can stop now, go listen to that, and come on back and join us again. We also said for the last episode that to grab the program for the symposium to have to follow along with, if you're in a position to do that, you can just get that at leadinglearning.com/program. And again, you don't have to have that handy, but you might find it helpful, and certainly it's something you can go back and reference after having heard this episode. So the last time around, we looked at the pre-event activities that we did for the symposium, and specifically the emphatically recommended readings. We talked about the priming activity, the jumpstart storytelling that opened up the symposium, talked about community assembly, our content pods, talked about the role of the vendors and trying to break down the barriers between faculty and attendees. And I should say we also just kind of, you know, consider the event overall and our perspective on it. This time we're going to take a look at some other parts of the event.
That's right. In the second part of our After Action Review, we want to look at the application labs, the synthesis sessions that we had at the end of both day one and day two. We want to talk about the outside speaker that we brought in, Rohit Bhargava. We want to talk about the curated connections that we had on the afternoon of day two, and also just touch briefly on kind of the breaks and the meals, the white space in the program.
And we're going to do this again with the aim of at least loosely addressing the four questions that tend to go along with an after-action review. And again, if you didn't catch the last episode, we talked about the after-action review being something that the Army in particular has implemented as a way of looking at the things that it does and having that process of review and reflection and improvement. And the questions loosely that get addressed are, you know, what did we set out to do? What actually happened? Why is there a difference between the two to the extent there is? And then, you know, what should we continue to do going forward, or what should we change? And we're not trying to, you know, ask each of those questions in detail with every part of the event, but we wanted to have that as kind of a background framework as we take a look at the symposium.
So if we take a look at the application labs, we had three different application labs held over the course of the two afternoons of the symposium. So basically all attendees got to go to all three of the application labs, but we split the big group of attendees into cohorts, both to sort of control just, you know, on the logistical level, the flow of, you know, who went to which application lab when, but then also too to hopefully really provide an opportunity for people over the course of those 2 days to get to know each other by interacting through those application labs, because we call them the app labs because they really were meant to be something where people rolled up their sleeves and engaged with some problem solving and some idea sharing in those sessions.
Yeah, and these were, you know, in contrast to the morning content pods, and the idea of the content pods where we were going to, you know, introduce these concise pieces of content that the faculty, and in at least one case, an attendee presented, you know, have some discussion, Q&A around those. But then the afternoon was to take some of the same themes, the same threads that were in those content pods, and as you're saying, Salisa, to be able to actually do some applied work around them, some meaningful group work to get into the concepts a little bit deeper and help to bring the experience of the attendees to bear. And I think, you know, that it was important to us that all of the attendees got to experience all of the app labs. At most conferences you go to, it's such a smorgasbord of sessions. And that can be great, you know, for variety and just making sure that everybody has something to pick and choose from. But since we're really focusing on community, we're really focusing on conversation, you know, getting people in a dialogue around the business of lifelong learning, we felt like they needed to have some common points of reference, and we focused these on the big themes for the conference. So everybody digging into those big themes together over those couple of days. And as you said, we did it in cohorts, and I think the cohort concept, you know, for the most part worked. I mean, it'd be hard to imagine how we would pull it off logistically without having to find people into set groups as they went through. But I also think, you know, some people, we did get the feedback, they would have liked to have mixed it up a little bit more with the cohorts. I think that's something, you know, we'll have to keep in mind going forward. Is there a better way to approach that? But in general, you know, having everybody at the symposium really going through those similar applied experiences and having a way to, you know, then have that common point of reference for conversation, at least conceptually, I think is something we want to continue doing.
And I think that it was also interesting to see that we had given thought to those cohorts. I mean, not just in terms of the logistical need there, but we did pay attention to how people were divided into those groups, and we tried to give some thought there. So perhaps one of the things we can do next go round is give even more thought, or sort of a question our assumptions about how to divide people into cohorts. For example, we tried to separate people who came from the same organization, thinking, you know, they might benefit if they were in a cohort with people that they aren't with all the time. You know, that's the kind of assumption or baseline approach that we could question next go round.
Right. Right. So we wanted to get that that diversity in there. And I think all in all, I mean, if we look at, you know, what we set out to do and what actually happened, to go back to those after action review questions, I mean, we set out for this to be a period where people really could sit down and dig in and apply themselves. I think we did that. The evaluations seem to reflect that for the most part. I mean, we can always get better at that. That we're going to be able to get better at every single thing that we do here. So I think those actually, you know, did work out as planned, what we set out to do and what actually happened. We'll need to continue to improve at them. We'll need to continue to figure out how we make them, you know, even more applicable and effective over time. But in terms of it being a part of the symposium going forward, I think that probably is going to be a core part for us going forward.
Well, I think it's because we strongly believe in what the application labs stand for, which are, you know, active learning, you know, that's when people are going to really make the biggest leaps with their learning, when they're actually trying to use it, think through it themselves. And so, yeah, I think it will remain a big focus.
And so then, I mean, one of the things that, you know, we're trying to make happen in the application labs, we're trying to facilitate happening, was, you know, a great deal of reflection, trying to connect the dots. I think there was an effort on our parts for a lot of connecting of dots throughout the entire event. You know, I'm sure we succeeded much more in some instances than in others, but we also wanted that to be a part of what followed the application labs on the first day, and then we also did this at the end of the second day, these synthesis sessions that we held at the end of each day, and really seeing those as a way to come back together as a group and have some group reflection around what had actually occurred during the day.
And I think you're right that for us it was about connecting the dots, and I think this year we tended to some extent to rely on the attendees to kind of share their own connection of those dots, and I think that worked to a certain extent. I think going forward we might want to think about how could we better position people to be connecting those dots. You know, are there better kind of reflection questions we could give them to guide them that way, or, you know, perhaps mirroring it ourselves, meaning, you know, sharing some of our kind of ahas that connect different things that happened during the day. But I think just having that chance built into the schedule for reflection is really important, because I think a lot of times we know that reflection, again, is integral to how we learn. But for the most part, a lot of learning opportunities leave the reflection to happen kind of on the learner's own time, you know, after the actual event. And so I think building that in is an important and valuable thing to do.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that really came home to me during the course of this symposium as a learning point personally was just how important it is to be able to ask the right questions, to be able to ask productive and effective questions. And we did put a lot of thought into, you know, for instance, with the synthesis activity, you know, what are we going to ask for that synthesis activity? And for the first day, we basically asked people, you know, what today made you uncomfortable and why? And to have some discussion around that, you know, was that the best, most effective question to ask? I'm not sure afterwards. I mean, I think we got some productive discussion around that, but I think, you know, that's always going to be a challenge for us with this event. And I think we need to challenge attendees more too to really be thinking through, you know, what are the questions to be asking when it comes to reflection, when it comes to synthesis. So, you know, to go back to the after action review framework again, you know, we set out for this to be a way for people to come together, reflect on the day, hopefully, as you were saying, Salisa, connect the dots a little bit more, provide some of the reflection in the event that's often deferred until after the event and may not happen at all. I think as far as something we want to keep as part of the event, we definitely want that to be part of the event structure going forward. Can we do that better? Can we ask better questions? Can we figure out how to facilitate that synthesis much better? Absolutely. But I think we did reasonably well the first time out on it.
So let's talk about Rohit Bhargava. We brought him in on day two, the opening session of day two. Jeff, you and I had both read his book, Non-Obvious, and really felt like what he was talking about in that book in terms of the central role of curation and then how curation can give you insight into non-obvious trends, you know, felt like a good message, you know, good ideas for this group. One thing that we very consciously decided, though, was not to have him on day one as sort of an opening keynote, which I think often happens at conferences. You sort of have that, you know, if you're going to have a bigger name presenter come in, that often that is how you open the event. But we knew we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we felt it was important to set the stage, you know, as we said in the last episode around the after action review, to set the stage for what we were hoping to achieve, but also in terms of just connecting people with that opening priming event. We felt it was really about the community. It was about the connections, and we had to lead with that and then bring in Rohit. And it's funny, I think, you know, of all the things that we kind of, you know, we're unsure about as we were planning this and trying to make a decision about it, was, do we bring in somebody like this, you know, from the outside? I think in a lot of ways, because it felt like the most sort of traditional, like the most traditional conference type activity, you know, you have the keynote, you have somebody come in to talk at the audience, basically. And in some ways that was antithetical to what we were trying to achieve here. But at the same time, we felt we needed some sort of insight from outside, some outside perspective. And Rohit, I mean, certainly thematically, as you were saying, the whole idea of curation, connecting the dots, which we've already been talking about, you know, earlier in this episode. I mean, he was right on as far as that goes. And connecting the dots in a way that allows you to look out to the future and lead, basically. And leading was a big theme here. So thematically, you know, he was certainly right on. And we just got the sense, you know, we listened to podcasts with him. We had conversations with him. You know, this wasn't the kind of speaker who was just sort of, you know, checking the boxes, going to show up, you know, show up and throw up, as I say, and then be out of there. I mean, he really engaged. He did very much tailor his comments to the group. He answered questions during the time of his talk, and then he was on the Q&A panel afterwards with the people who delivered content pods. So he really did engage with the event, and we got great feedback on it. So this was something that, you know, we were very worried about. But just, I think, came through great. You know, whether we do it again, whether we keep, you know, bringing in that outside perspective, I mean, I think we will. That still feels like the right thing to do. And I feel like this time, you know, when we set out to bring in that outside perspective and blend it in, I feel like Rohit worked out very well. And I would definitely highly recommend Rohit to anybody who's considering a speaker for an event.
And so on the afternoon of day two, we did a curated connections session. And this was basically, we upfront before the event had gone out with potential topics that we thought the attendees would like to talk about, and had kind of vetted those and identified the ones that had seemed to have critical mass, that there would be enough people in the room who would be interested in those topics, and then did some pre-work before the symposium to try to identify facilitators for that, and then wound up doing a lot of that kind of recruiting of facilitators at the symposium and you know, shortly before that curated connections session. So Jeff, just, you know, what's your perspective on the curated connections and how well it turned out given what we were trying to accomplish with them?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, this is one where, you know, I've been at conferences before where you put people in together in groups like this, and it sounds good on the surface. You're going to get peers together. They're going to discuss things, and somehow they just never turn out to be all that productive. So, you know, I sat in during one of the sessions. I mean, I wanted to be at one of the tables for this, and I was at a table talking about credentialing. And I mean, personally, I found it extremely productive. I mean, people raised their issues, but there was a clear eye among the people at the table towards how do we actually, you know, provide some substance that helps to address these issues. It actually moves people forward. And it was interesting. We did our debrief with the faculty this week, or we've done part of the debrief with the faculty. And Lisa Bing, who is, you know, one of the faculty members, she was also there for this, and she participated, and she found that the conversations that she was in also to be productive. And she asked, you know, would this have worked as well if these weren't learning professionals who were at the event? And I think my perspective is probably not, but we were kind of banking on that, you know, you're getting people together at a table who are very oriented towards learning, you know, are accustomed to the idea of facilitating these types of learning experiences, and are probably going to be more capable than a lot of folks are at getting good substantive work out of that experience together. And I think for the most part, you know, that happened. We did get, you know, some feedback in the evaluations that, you know, some of the discussions weren't as productive. So, you know, I think going forward, probably like everything we've mentioned in this episode, we can do better at it. We can do more work ahead of time to really get the topics down. We can do more work with the facilitators. We can do more work to frame it. But personally, you know, out of everything that we did at the event, you know, that I want to make sure we do going forward and do well, this might be the number one thing. I really want to see the curated connections, because I think there was a lot of value that was generated from those.
And so then the last thing that we want to cover in this episode specifically is the breaks and the meals, and just kind of reflecting on those. And I know when we set out, put the program together, we wanted there to be white space in the program. We didn't want it to just be, you know, the absolute minimal breaks. We wanted people to have a chance to take care of their needs, whether that was, you know, running to the bathroom or getting something to drink or returning an email or checking voicemail, or, and I don't know how much people were actually able to do this, but to just sit and think about something that had happened earlier in the day, or, you know, get up and walk around the block outside, just something to give people that space to take care of what they need to, which may even mean doing nothing. And I think that's the kind of ideal goal, would be to sort of do nothing or nothing officially related to the content. I think that, and then for lunch, we gave, you know, more than an hour. The meals, the lunch was provided, so, you know, people didn't have to go out and look for that. And day one, we had an hour and a half, and day two, we had 75 minutes for that. And so I think it felt good in general. I mean, I think you could always have, you know, longer breaks, and for some people that would be beneficial. For others, then I think it starts to feel like they're too big of holes in the schedule. So I think by and large it was a nice balance of kind of enough time without it being too big a gap between, you know, one session and then the next session.
Yeah, it's interesting when we were planning this and going through the programming and trying to lay everything out, you know, felt like we were providing ample time for lunch, and I think we did. You know, and there was people who commented, well, you know, maybe we could have gone out for lunch on our own one day. And I think there was enough time for that to happen if people really wanted to do that. I feel strongly that providing meals so that people don't have to think about that and can maximize their free time, you know, I feel like we want to do that. A group can always break off and decide that they want to go out on their own. You know, that's fair game. But when you looked at the breaks between sessions, you know, I think we did what we could, and we can discuss this a little bit more when we come back to looking at the event overall. But, you know, it was hard to figure out how to pare things down or take things out so that you could arrange things so that there would be, you know, some reasonable amount of time in between sessions. And we ended up, you know, with like 15-minute breaks for the most part. And part of me really wanted a half hour in there. I have to say, I went to an event that the Pricing Society held, the Professional Pricing Society, a while back. And it was an all-day thing. And they had half-hour breaks between their sessions, which was one of the first times I'd experienced that. And I found that very valuable, but at the same time, you know, that was a focused one topic seminar that I was going to. It wasn't trying to put together a lot of pieces and make that flow throughout the day. Just felt very difficult to do with our program, and it's just, you know, something we have to look at going forward. Is there a way that we could maybe even provide a little bit more white space than we did around the sessions themselves? But I think during lunch we did a good job, and in general, I mean, you know, 15 minutes is still good. I mean, people had the time. And whether people would have done more with more time or not, I, you know, some will, some won't. That's always a mixed bag. But in general, you know, I think providing the white space and I think, you know, making sure the meals are there, making it easy for people to take advantage of time as much as possible was an important thing to do. And we'll keep, you know, striving to be as good about that as we can.
So if we look at just kind of big things to address or change in general, I know that one thing we've already thought about is just we have this one symposium behind us now, and so looking forward, I think we know more what needs to go into it, and I think that that will allow us to communicate sooner and also to be more concise in what we communicate. You know, there's the statement that gets attributed to a lot of different writers, but it's, you know, if I'd had more time, I would have written a shorter letter. You know, it's right, this idea, yeah. Like, you know, being concise actually requires a great deal of effort and planning, and I think that we can move more towards concision now that we have this experience behind us.
Yeah, definitely. You know, though at the same time, I mean, you know, one of the reasons that we didn't communicate everything very early and sometimes maybe communicated more often than people would have liked is that we were building this very dynamically, and I think we have to be careful not to lose that, because that was part of the essence of the event. You know, we didn't want to set an agenda a year in advance and say these are the things that, you know, that we're going to come together to do. We wanted to be able to communicate with participants, you know, as they registered, get their input, get their feedback. I mean, that's something we very carefully did along the way, was we really crafted this agenda with a lot of input from registrants, certainly our Founders Club registrants, but even beyond that, and our advisors. So it was very dynamic to shape it. But it did mean that, you know, we were still working on it up until, you know, fairly close to the event to make sure that we really had it right. And I know that makes some people uncomfortable. You know, they want to know. They don't like that ambiguity. But I think there's always going to be some of that ambiguity in there. But as you said, we will be able to communicate earlier. We will be able to be more concise, just as a natural byproduct of the learning of having done this event once. And so we'll certainly do that.
I know another question we will get to wrestle with is just the scale of the symposium and how, as it grows over time, which we hope it does and plan for it to, you know, what will that mean for sort of the dynamic in the room? Because it was a very hands-on conference in many ways, because we were bringing the full group together, you know, if that full group gets, you know, twice the size, three times the size, you know, at what point do you begin losing the ability to sort of truly have it feel like, oh, we are here as one collective, you know, entity, and you really do have a sense of, okay, I've talked to most people here and all of that. So I know that that's something we're going to want to try to balance is, you know, what is the right level of growth so that we don't completely lose that true sense of community around the event.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll stick to the never say never sort of philosophy. So I won't say, you know, we never want this to be a 1,000-person event or you know, a 2,500-person event. But certainly, you know, even getting it to, as you said, twice the size or three times the size that it was this year, it's going to require a lot of thought, a lot of planning, a lot of getting good processes in place to make sure that happens. And the nature of the event, you know, and I'll say this to anybody who came this year who's listening to the podcast, the nature of the event is almost certain to change, at least somewhat, by next year and by the years after. You know, as you get bigger, as you learn, as you, you know, make changes, something's going to change. Hopefully things will be gained for anything that gets lost along the way. But yeah, that issue of scale, you know, obviously that's something that's front of mind for us right now. And then we already touched on it in the last episode, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I think, you know, a continuing theme for us is going to be really trying to articulate this, not so much as an event, but, you know, as a community, as a process of which the event is just one part. And that doesn't mean that, you know, we're not going to work very hard to make sure that those 2 days, you know, where we have the symposium are, you know, everything they can be. But we all know, you know, as people in the field of learning, that there's only so much you're going to get out of 2 days, no matter how good it is. You know, that you have to have the lead up to it. You have to have what comes afterwards. Ideally, and this is what we're aiming for, you stay connected as a community over time. You're engaged in a learning process over time. And this just happens to be one of the peaks in the process, basically, as you're going along. So we really want to continue to articulate that and, you know, get people to this event, but more importantly, get them into the Leading Learning community and collaborating with each other and learning from each other over time.
And I think as we're looking at this process, at this community, and looking forward to that next peak that will be the next symposium, you know, I think one thing we're going to have to look at is what to trim back. I think there's always, there can be the temptation to add to, mm-hmm. to something that's going well, but I think that we know that we can't just add and add. You know, we need to be thinking about, okay, if we're adding this, what are we trimming back and right. or taking away entirely, you know. My sense is that it will be mostly more of a trimming back rather than, you know, removing elements of the symposium whole scale, but, you know, we'll certainly have to look at that more in detail as we are faced with very concrete choices about, okay, how are we going to spend the 2 days together?
Yeah, because, I mean, we did pack a lot into those 2 days, and I think, you know, and some of this came through in the evaluations, but some just, I think, came through from, you know, interacting with people. I mean, particularly by the end of day one, I mean, we had covered a lot of ground. We had done a lot, and we made a decision at the end of day one to actually end a little bit early. We didn't do a hot seat that we'd been planning to do, just because we felt like people were a little tapped out, and that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I think a lot of people appreciated the fact that, wow, you know, they had gotten so much, and it wasn't just fire hose stuff. It was immersion stuff. I mean, you were just really deeply immersed and engaged, and people at this event, you know, as far as I could tell, really were deeply engaged in what they were doing. But, you know, that it goes back to the idea of white space, and just, you know, how do you just work that in with just the what it is to be a human being and you know, have to engage that intensely over a period of a couple of days. So yeah, you know, we'll be looking at how do we deliver as much value as possible, but, you know, not be overwhelming in the process as well. And that just goes back to the idea that that this is part of a continuum, you know, that we're all participating in. So maybe as that becomes more fully absorbed by the folks who are participating, maybe so much doesn't have to be packed into those 2 days. There's more that can, you know, organically happen among the people who show up, and then before and afterwards. And then one specific thing that I'd really like to make sure we figure out a way to address as well as possible going forward is we had a surprising number of teams show up at the event, and I have to say I had not really thought about that so much ahead of time. I feel like typically when I go to conferences, I'm just meeting mostly just other individuals from organizations. So they're the only person there representing their organization. Or even if they have more than one person there, those people are all off, you know, doing the standard multiple tracks and things like that. But we had teams show up here who, you know, knew this was a very focused curriculum, a way for them to all, you know, connect the dots together, as we've been talking about, have similar and yet still different experiences to then take back and absorb and apply within the office environment. So we were surprised by how many teams did show up, and then how many people were telling us by the end of the event that next year they are bringing their team. They're going to bring two or three people from their organization. So, you know, we didn't have a specific plan for maximizing the value for teams of people. I mean, I think that'll happen naturally just because of the way that we design things. But I would like to focus on that a little bit more and think through, okay, next year, you know, as we know we have teams from organizations, you know, how do we facilitate that? How do we make sure that they're really going to get maximum value, along with the individuals, obviously, who will be showing up to represent organizations?
So that is what we set out to cover in terms of going over the remaining elements of the symposium. You know, we're, what, about 3 weeks after the event at this point?
If even, only two.
Only two, all right, yeah. Time just feels like time's flying. But, you know, I mean, I think we're both really excited still about what happened in Baltimore at the end of October. We're really excited about having the opportunity to build on that experience and to really take the community and this process forward and just see where it leads.
Yeah, and you know, I think probably to be clear in the end, I mean, I think we both view it as a success. I mean, we're extremely pleased with how things went. Can always improve. Obviously, we're very dedicated to learning and improving. And certainly, you know, these podcasts don't mark the end of our reflection on this. We're going to be engaged with this for the whole next year and beyond as part of this, you know, process and community going forward. But you know, the fact that that we were able to pull it off the first time, I'm extremely grateful to the folks who did show up, and we are looking forward to doing it again. And in the meantime, we will be continuing with this podcast, of course. It's just one of the ways that we're, you know, reaching out to the community. We hope if you're listening to this that, you know, if you were at the event or if you weren't but just have questions about it, that you will comment on it. You can get the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode14, and that's a blog post where this episode is posted, so you're able to comment there. And you know, we hope you will comment there, give us any feedback that you haven't already given us around the symposium, ask us any questions about it. We'd love to hear from you and have an ongoing dialogue around it. As far as the podcast itself goes, you know, once you end up on that blog post, you'll see options for subscribing, and you know, we certainly hope, whether it's via iTunes or RSS or whatever podcatcher type approach you use, that you will subscribe to the Leading Learning podcast and listen in over time. This is just one small way of being part of the community.
And if you are enjoying the podcast, we encourage you to spread the love, share the word about the podcast. You can do that by going to leadinglearning.com/share, and that will pre-populate a tweet, or you can take that text and take it to your social network of choice.
So thanks so much for joining us for this episode on After Action Review of the Leading Learning Symposium. We hope you've enjoyed it. We look forward to your comments, and we look forward to seeing you the next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.